Case number 13-7007 et al. Mary Nell Wyatt, individually and as executrix of the estate of Ronald E. Wyatt et al. Versus Syrian Arab Republic appellant. Mr. Clark for the appellant, Mr. Katz for the appellees.
Good morning. I please the court, Ramsey Clark from the Syrian Arab Republic. The question before the court is whether $300 million in punitive damages is impermissibly excessive on the facts of this case. The district court, in imposing $300 million, cited as its standard the same measure that were imposed in an earlier case out of Iraq called Gates.
Mr. Clark, respectfully, the first question is whether or not you can raise that at the appellate level when no appearance was made and the issue was not raised before the district court. There are factual determinations to make with respect to an assessment of punitive damages, and if your client was going to raise those, they have to be raised in the district court in the first instance. It's not an abstract question. And the case law is, if you don't raise it in the trial court in the first instance, it's typically forfeited, and especially in a case like this where there are factual issues.
So you're saying that because we did not participate in the district court after its initial determination in the case.
Right. That's the problem. You didn't participate. Yeah. No record has been made. So it's not like the district court refused to consider evidence that you put in with respect to the level of punitive damages that might or might not be appropriate. There was no record made.
But the facts of the case are in the record, but what the plaintiff presented on which the punitive damages were based. And $300 million is just excessive for the injury that was inflicted there. And those facts are in the record.
Okay. But that objection was not raised below. That objection was not raised below.
No, because there was no defendant there.
Right, that's the problem. That was your client's choice.
But the question remains is whether it's an objection or not, whether $300 million...
No. That we can't operate that way. The question is whether or not it was properly raised below. There are exceptional circumstances where we might take something that was not raised below, but I don't know why this would fit it.
So even though the record is complete and shows what the facts are and shows that the defendant was not represented in that aspect of the trial, this court doesn't have jurisdiction to review the matter, the issue?
It's not a jurisdictional matter. It's a prudential matter, but it's a strong prudential rule. And in a case like this, where the person opposing what was assessed would offer evidence, for example, to try and distinguish the other cases or to discuss what is and is not relevant, none of that's before us. So the district court worked with what it had, and it came up with a result. The district court felt that there were comparative cases that were on point.
Well, but the court can see from the record that the district judge was imposing the same punitive damages in a whole series of cases, $300 million.
Right.
Without distinction of the injury inflicted or the harm done. That's a pretty big piece of money. And the rationality of a windfall of, at least on paper, of $300 million because there's no objection in the record when there was no counsel present. leaves a strange end for U.S. justice, that a foreign sovereign would be subjected to a $300 million punitive damages if there was essentially no injury in the case.
Well, no, the next foreign sovereign might appear and object.
So the punishment is for not appearing and objecting?
It isn't punishment. It's just, you know, we're a system of justice and we operate pursuant to rules. Your client had reason to know what the rules are. If you want to object to something, you appear in the proceedings and make your case. And the next one, if there is a next one, is not going to be bound by this, because if the counsel would easily say, it was never litigated. We have points that we want to make to distinguish our case from those prior cases. That wasn't done here.
Well, so there are not many next sovereigns that would appear, because there are only a few.
Well, we hope we don't have incidents like this. We're not encouraging it. But yeah, this wouldn't be precedent in any way. This hasn't been litigated, fully litigated.
Well, if failure to object when you're not present can subject you to $300 million in punitive damages for nothing, or a heinous injury without discrimination, then the law is not acting with fairness or reason. That's a lot of money, and it's against a foreign sovereign, which is not a friendly one at this time, has been and may be again. And we're talking about, you read in the paper every day about the hardships of the Syrian people. The court has compared the injury here to the Gates case, where, and taken the same measure from the Gates case, where the injury was decapitation, not fit for animals, the court said. And that's not equal justice under law. Okay. So are you saying, in effect, the court doesn't want to hear more argument or discussion on the issue because it wasn't raised there? Can be no defense.
No, I'm just raising one matter of significant concern. If we remanded, would your client then make an appearance in court, in the trial court?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll simply point out that the court will be faced in these.
Wait, let me make sure I understand your position. If we remanded for reconsideration, would your clients make an appearance in court or continue to do what they've been doing, that is, not show up?
I can't say for sure, but I doubt it.
Well, then you're coming in with a very weak position if you can't assure us at a minimum that with a remand, your client would participate and voice the objections to the district court. Yeah, our system of justice is such that, yeah, you're coming in with a very weak position.
Well, it may seem weak, but it's a difficult situation for the government, too. It's got lots of problems, as we read the newspapers every day. And if they told us not to appear this time, and I have to assume they would tell us not, we don't even have direct communication with them. We work through the UN, the UN mission of Syria. I assume they would tell us not to appear on the merits because they believe it's beneath their position as a sovereign state, which they consider themselves to be. But there'll be there have been all these cases, and the court's going to have to face these questions, whether equal punitive damages in these cases of $300 million, regardless of the injury, are sustainable under U.S. law. And I see I've got 37 seconds left, and I'll give those back to you. Thank you.
Right. Mr. Katz, before you begin, did you authorize the filing of this notice of waiver of reply? This one-page poem?
Yes, Your Honor.
Did you run it by your client?
I don't believe so. I don't recall. I mean,
I'd advise you, if you're ever up here again or down here from New York, don't ever file anything like this again.
I apologize, Your Honor. Mayor Katz, on behalf of the plaintiffs in this case, the Wyatt and Wilson families, who suffered the terrible fate of having their patriarchs kidnapped by terrorists and held captive in the Turkish mountains for 3 weeks in freezing cold under deplorable conditions. They received judgment in the district court for a significant amount of money. After effecting service through via 1608A4, that's 28 U.S.C. 1608A4, to establish the case and jurisdiction. The district court said that we had to then, pursuant to 1608E, effect service again, despite that Syria had appeared
you
in the case.
You mean the district court just reciting what the law requires?
The statute provides that a copy of such default judgment shall be sent to the foreign state or political subdivision, etc. I think there's a reasonable question as to what Congress meant by default judgment in the statute. I think that default judgment in the context clearly means a default, a true default, in which the defendant is not appearing. The defendant is not there. The defendant is not aware of the judgment. The defendant is not litigating before this court the judgment. There is absolutely no reason to assume that Congress wanted service via diplomatic channels, which is what this would require, of a judgment that the defendant is clearly aware of and litigating. That seems nonsensical. I think it renders the statute bizarre, frankly. It can't be that Congress intended that.
Why? Why is that bizarre?
Because it serves no purpose. Why in the world would Congress want service of a judgment that the defendant is clearly aware of? That the defendant is
how do we know they're clearly aware of it?
They're litigating before this court, Your Honor.
Has someone certified that?
Congress
said we want certain notice requirements met, and then no one can accuse us. I think that's what they're effectively saying. No one can accuse us in these kinds of cases of playing games. We're able to say that in our system of justice, we went through the process, and then when the award was made, the judgment was issued, you got notice under a statute, and everyone gets the same kind of notice. That's not bizarre. It seems perfectly fair and reasonable. That's why Congress enacted the statute that they enacted.
When an attorney appears in a case, Your Honor, service is affected pursuant to Federal Civil Procedure 5B1, I believe it is. But service is banned on the attorney, which is certainly applicable here. Congress was enacting the statute within that backdrop. 5B1
was enacted the statute. It says what it says.
The statute
doesn't have any exceptions set out in the statute.
The statute says what it says, but I think there's a fair question as to what
it says. What it says, there's not many buts after that.
I think there's a fair question, Your Honor, of what the statute means. Well, what is a default judgment? I think default judgment.
It's pretty clear that it means what it says.
What is a default judgment in this context? I mean, a default judgment under Rule 55 is not necessarily the same thing as a default judgment under 1608E.
Why is that?
Again, because it doesn't make any sense in this context.
This is all Congress. Yeah, this is all your perception. I don't know why it doesn't make sense. If I can read it and understand it, that's one way to measure whether it makes sense. It makes sense to me. I read it and understand it. Doesn't seem tricky to me. Why didn't you do it is what doesn't make sense.
Why didn't we do it? Because it takes a year and a tremendous amount of money.
Well, we're wasting a year now.
Well, we were here anyway because Syria appealed, Your Honor.
You could have been doing this. You could have effectuated the process of notice giving a while ago.
Respectfully, Your Honor, we couldn't have because this case is before this court. The district court wouldn't have allowed us to go forward. We have to file a motion pursuant to 1610C, I think it is, to get permission from the district court to move forward, which we attempted to do. And the district court said, no, you can't do that because we have to wait for the D.C. Circuit to resolve this case.
Well, it's what Congress required.
The circuit courts, this court has not opined on this particular issue, but the circuit courts in dealing with other provisions of 1608, including 1608E, have said that substantial compliance is adequate, that you don't need strict compliance.
What's your substantial compliance? What have you done to comply?
The service was affected by the district court. The plaintiffs haven't actually done anything, Your Honor.
You've done nothing. Of course, you say it's pending here, so maybe you couldn't, but therefore, you can't say you've done substantial compliance when you haven't done anything.
Well, we attempted service via 1608A3, or pursuant to the rules of 1608A3, but by DHL. We did do that. But, you know, there's another case
in
involving.
In any event, Congress is pretty plain in what they said, right?
I think it's very plain, Your Honor, but I think in the context it can't mean what I think imputing the rule of default judgment under Rule 55 to the statute, it can't possibly be what Congress had in mind. Congress clearly has in mind affecting actual notice.
When is the last time this Court said what Congress clearly said isn't what we're going to do? Yeah. When is the last time we said that?
Yeah, Your Honor, I don't have an answer. I can't.
We don't have to read Congress's mind when you tell us what Congress had in mind. We don't have to read their mind. They don't have one mind. What they do together, they publish, they print it, they enact it.
I agree with you.
That's the end of that thing.
Your Honor, as I said before, most circuit courts of appeals have understood.
They've never had this precise question.
There was a case that dealt with 1608E. I forget which court it is. I can look it up within my brief. The Baker Court involving the same defendant. This is 810 F sub 2nd 90, page 101, DDC 2011. Expressly permitted noncompliance with 1608E, or compliance
that's
under...
That's not a circuit court case.
That was a district court case. That's correct. There is a circuit court case dealing with 1608E. I'll try to find it while I'm talking. But the other provisions of 1608B, I believe that this court did not hold so. But there was a Ninth Circuit case recently regarding 1608B that's explicitly said that substantial compliance is sufficient. That's Peterson v. Islamic Republic of Iran, 627 F. 3rd 1117.
There was substantial compliance. There isn't any here.
I think substantial compliance in this context means affecting the purposes sought by Congress, which is actual notice. The 1608B case that I mentioned is unfortunately not before me at the moment. In the Transero case of 1994, written by this court, Judge Santel, I believe, wrote the decision. The court implied that service under 1608B would be sufficient through substantial compliance. That you need strict compliance for 1608A.
Can we imply that?
I actually have part of the language of the decision somewhere in here. This is a quote. Leniency in this case would disorder the statutory scheme. The committee report states that section 1608A, quote, sets forth the exclusive procedures for service on a foreign state, but contains no such admonition for section 1608B. And it went on to suggest that 1608B...
So the very implication we have there is at odds with what you're arguing here.
I'm sorry?
The implication there is at odds with what you're arguing here. Read again what you just said.
Leniency in this case would disorder the statutory scheme. The committee report for the states at 1608A sets forth the exclusive procedures reserved on a foreign state. I should note, we're not dealing with 1608A, we're dealing with 1608E, even though it's incorporated by reference, but the interests are quite different. But contains no such admonition for 1608B. 1608E, the court in Transera was concerned with, quote, the lack of a sophisticated knowledge of the United States legal system that foreign states might possess. Might not possess, rather. With regard to 1608E, we're post that point. The foreign government is aware of the case because they receive notice pursuant to 1608A. Personal jurisdiction is established. The concerns animating Transero are not present here.
Let me ask you, I think we understand your position on this. Let me ask you, why would we look away from a $300 million punitive damage award, which appears to be based on circumstances that are different than the cases that were relied upon by the district court?
I think Your Honor's questions to my opponent are quite telling. I mean, you know, that Syria failed to appear. Syria failed to give us the opportunity
It's not a jurisdictional requirement.
That's true.
If they can appear here now. The question is whether they can erase it now, and that is not a jurisdictional rule. It is the rules of forfeiture are firm, and we're pretty rigorous in enforcing them, but there are cases where we can look at what is presented because there are exceptional circumstances.
You're certainly right, Your Honor. This is not a jurisdictional issue. However, my clients were prejudiced by failure, by the inability to engage in discovery. We didn't have the opportunity to engage in any discovery at all. We had to prove our case based on evidence that we were able to obtain on our own. via discovery, more facts certainly would have come out that were relevant. There's no transcript before this court, which is relevant. I mean, the court can't really assess the factual assessments of the district court because it doesn't have the facts before it. All it really has is whatever's in the record, which is limited. I mean, you have the district court decision. You have a declaration that we presented in our supplemental appendix, and that's it.
Well, and you have cases that appear, the district court's reliance on certain precedent involved records that are facially quite different from the bad behavior in this case.
This case does not involve decapitation, Your Honor.
That's right.
But it does involve a kidnapping, being kept under deplorable conditions for 3 weeks.
I'm not suggesting that what we're looking at is nice or not quite horrendous. What I'm suggesting is that facially, they're very different from the cases cited by the district court.
Certainly. I mean, I think there's no question about that. But I think that describing them as not nice understates it. I mean, these people's lives will forever change.
I don't mean to understate it. I said horrendous as well.
Oh, okay. It's certainly the case that the cases are different. But whether they're distinguishable is a factual question. Whether they're distinguishable as a matter of law is a factual question ultimately that turns on the facts.
Well, I'm just asking you then, given our case law, is this a circumstance that requires us to remand so the district, with the other side having an opportunity to participate or not?
I think it'd be a fair question if we had certification from Siri that they're going to appear. But being that we just heard earlier that they're not going to appear, I think there's no point in that. It just furthers the delay in this case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay.
All right, is there any time left?
Not only make a brief statement, but can try to answer any questions you may have. The Syrian government's interest is limited to the issue of sovereign equality. It has a large Kurdish population itself. Kurdish people have been persecuted in throughout the region, in Turkey and Iran and Iraq, and they'd like to see equal treatment in these cases. And thank you for your time.